I'm Rachel Norda, director of the book publishing program at Portland State University, and also a series editor for Cambridge University Press for book studies and print culture. And I'm really excited to be here with Angus Phillips and Miha Kovic today. Angus Phillips is a professor of publishing and director of the Oxford International Center for Publishing at Oxford Brookes University. And he has degrees from Oxford and Warwick Universities. And before joining Oxford Brookes, he ran a trade and reference list at Oxford University Press. His previous books include Turning the Page and Inside Book Publishing. He is the co-editor of the Oxford Handbook of Publishing and chief editor of the premier publishing journal Logos. His books have been translated into 7 languages. Thanks for being here, Angus.
Very pleased to be talking to you today.
And then we also have Miha. Miha Kovic is a professor of publishing studies at the University of Ljubljana. And before joining academia, he worked as an editorial director in the 2 largest Slovenian publishing houses and as editorial director of the Slovenian edition of National Geographic magazine. His previous academic work, written in English, is Never Mind the Web. And his latest book, Read to Breathe, written and first published in Slovenian, is being translated into 6 languages. Thanks for being here, Miha.
Thank you, Rachel.
All right, I'm really excited about this conversation today. Very recently, Miha and Angus published with Cambridge University Press a mini graph, so a monograph, but smaller, about what a book is. And so I'm excited to talk around that topic today. Could you give us some background of this book? You've written some papers on this book before, so tell us more about that.
Well, it stems from some work we've done over the last few years around firstly book statistics, but also looking at the definitions of what the book is. And previous definitions tend to concentrate on print. And given the arrival, for example, of the audiobook and the ebook, we felt that there needed to be some work done around refreshing definitions of the book and see what works in the present digital environment. But also, if we want to measure the health of the book and how is the book doing given the arrival of so many different media over the last decades, and the book is competing with lots of different media, how do we actually measure the health of the book? And so we started looking at book statistics as well. And it's very difficult to get comparable stats across different countries because different publisher associations, different industries measure book statistics in a different way. And for example, traditionally, we've looked at how many new titles are published in a market, but now we've got the arrival of self-publishing. And so there are hundreds of thousands of self-published titles being published around the world. And does that indicate the health of the book and in which direction? Previously, we've measured the health of the book by the number of ISBNs issued, and now there are ISBNs issued for different formats of the book, and you can publish a book on Amazon without an ISBN at all. So is the ISBN a correct marker anymore of the health of the book and what's happening in the area of the book? So, yeah, we've written a couple of papers, and out of that grew an interest in sort of looking in a bit more depth at how the book has become and adapted and what kind of formats exist within the family of the book now in the present environment across different book markets. So I hope, Miha, you agree with that sort of introduction to how we set about this.
Yeah, well, when we discuss this, I think we should also mention the names of Adrian van der Weel and Rüdiger Wischenbart, with whom we co-authored first the paper on book statistics and then a paper on what is a book. That was very productive collaboration because we find out that we share different views about what a book is. And it was quite interesting and challenging to find the common denominator of these different views. And then in the second step, I would say that Angus and I figured out that we have more in common about our views, how to define the book. And that's how this little booklet came out. I would like to stress one more thing. I mean, I spent 20 years working in book industry, I'm very old, so I started to work in publishing in that time Yugoslavia. And what amazed me was that we didn't have any statistics in those days. And I saw that this is an issue of a country which was not well organized and of a book industry which was not well organized. We have some data of number of published titles, but nothing else. But when I started to look around for comparisons, I was quite astonished when I figured out that actually our situation in Southeast Europe was not so different than in many other European countries. And then, of course, as a natural consequence, two answers come. Why these statistics do not exist? And one of the answers was because in the last 25 years, it became quite difficult to define the book. And if you cannot define properly the object of the statistics, you cannot produce the statistics. And this was, let's say, a starting point of writing this book.
And we also interested in the health of reading as well. And people are probably reading more than they ever have before. But in terms of reading books, we know that probably half the books we buy are not read at all. And so it goes on, you know, how do we measure the health of reading, which we know is important for deep thinking and cognitive development? So that was a kind of another area of interest as well.
If I may add, I'm a kind of a reading fundamentalist, perhaps more orthodox than Angus in this. Because I believe that book reading is a kind of training for thinking. You cannot develop critical thinking and you cannot develop focus if you are not capable of reading long linear texts. And I think this is valid regardless of the, let's say, culture, civilization, gender, and age. It's something what helps people to learn how to think. And from this point of view, I see reading as one of the dominant features of understanding what is a book. Yet, this doesn't mean that there are not artifacts that could be considered as books, which cannot be read because they have no text or because they are audio product. So this is very actually quite complicated and interesting amalgam of different artifacts which have in common reading long linear texts and so on, and figuring out this smallest common denominator of these features was really quite a challenge.
You've identified some really important things here, the lack of data in the industry, and that can really problematize many things, but including how we define the object of our study, and then just how much the publishing industry has changed over the last few decades and how audiobooks and ebooks and other formats impact things. Really interesting stuff. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about the model with the three elements that you developed for this book, because of its, you know, uniqueness and how it aims to solve some of these things. So could you tell us more about that?
Well, I would say that this was quite a coincidence that we invented this model. We started the book with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And then when we were discussing this model, we find out that we were both reading Sissin's Liu, Chinese author's book trilogy, Free Body Problem. And when we were discussing this idea of free body problem in physics, which, you know, basically says that if you have free bodies, that if there are three bodies connected, there could never be in a stable position. We somehow figured out that perhaps the book in the contemporary book functions in a similar way. So it came up just as an idea. But when we started to look more in detail, we find out that this is actually really, in the end of the day, quite a useful model. So we instead of free bodies, we have architecture, information architecture of the book. We have a business model, and what else, Angus?
We have the book as a carrier of information and enjoyment. Yes, so the book can be read for information, or for a story can be read for pleasure. So the information architecture idea is basically saying the book is of a certain type, has a certain architecture. So you look at a book and it has a title page, it has page numbers, it has chapters, it has that linear structure that we're all very familiar with the printed book. And that now extends into what we've called the vanilla ebook. So the ebook that is very popular, for example, in the area of genre fiction, where people read in a linear fashion a digital book, and that very much mimics the architecture of the printed book. And we've also in the book talk about the vanilla audiobook. So the audiobook that is taken from a printed book that is read in that linear fashion, and people listen to in that way. So that information architecture concept works as a way of defining the book, both in print, but also I think extends to the vanilla versions in digital form as well. And look at the business model idea, that's very much the kind of single copy business model that the book traditionally has had for hundreds of years. And we go to a bookshop, we buy a printed book, we buy a single copy, I download from some large internet bookseller, which I won't name, an ebook because I'm looking at something and I want to look at it in the next couple of minutes, and I want to look something up straight away, or I want to read the latest detective story or whatever. So that business model extends to the vanilla audiobook and the vanilla ebook as well. So that's the traditional business model, and that separates content in book form. For example, I can read a story on Wattpad, but it's not the same business model as the book. And I'll let Michal talk a bit more about the book as carrier of information and the order of the book.
Yeah, well, what I find amazing is that this outcome of printing revolution, the decalness of the page, the fact that practically all the pages in the same edition of the books are identical, changed so much the way how people think and exchange knowledge. Namely, this small technical feature of the book gave birth to a lot of protocols which people used when they were communicating knowledge. Indexes, pagination, chapters, title pages, all this helped people to quote the content and to discuss the same content by knowing about what they are discussing. And this very structure of the book, which was actually result of a economic and technical revolution, practically shaped the way how we exchange knowledge for, let's say, 300 years. So I would say that all our intellectual lives are interwoven with these protocols which come from the book and which arrange how we exchange knowledge. Even more so, the format of the book with its number of pages and with economic of printing actually functioned as a kind of, let's say, market censorship, which helped decide what will be published and what will not be published. And this technical and economic features of the book actually changed publishers into a kind of a gatekeepers of knowledge. And this model was functional for about 300 years. It was actually so efficient that we even didn't notice it. And that's why one of the theories is that the book as such became a kind of a floating signifier. We were never able to define for, let's say, last 300 years, what a book is and what a book does in our lives, because our way of thinking was so deeply influenced by the book formats. And the very fact that we started to discuss these things now, and that we were able to write this little book, asking a question, is this a book, very likely indicates that this era is coming to an end. The order of the book, as defined by Adrian van der Wel, might be falling apart. That's why we are starting to see its main features, its contours, the logic which makes this order run. So I think we are living in really important times, in times of let's say not only media change but also a big intellectual change, which is affected by this disintegration of the order of the book. I'm not saying that this is a catastrophe, as somebody might say, or that this disintegration is great, because I don't know what the future brings. I'm just trying to say that we are entering a huge change in the way how knowledge is being reproduced and how the, let's say, the status in intellectual production is being changed. And this is, I think, one of the most important points of our book.
Yeah, and we've identified, from what Michal's just been saying, there are advantages for the book that flow and the advantages for the publishing industry, for example, at low taxation for books. And during the pandemic in the UK, the government took tax off ebooks because they wanted people to have access to books during the pandemic where they couldn't go into a bookstore. And so they're trying to take that tax away on ebooks. And so there are countries where bookstores are supported, print runs are supported, because books are seen as this valuable carrier of information and knowledge and should be supported. But if the order of the book is, as Miha says, disintegrating to some extent, then that raises questions about, does the book warrant that special place anymore?
Stephen Fry, and that's one of my favorite phrases. Stephen Fry used the phrase "the machine that made us" for printing machine, and I think this is very short and very exact definition what book did to Western civilization. Because in our book we are actually limited to the book in Western civilization. We don't know enough about China, about some other countries and cultures. For writing this kind of volume, this would require much more time and much more interdisciplinary work. But in Western civilization, the books, to an extent, made us as cultural and social and knowledgeable beings. And the fact that this order of the book is falling apart and perhaps being disintegrated and substituted with something else, what we don't properly understand. Yes, of course, this doesn't mean that the book is going away. It's not going away. And the data which we have from publishing statistics indicates that the book is here to stay. Only its social status is somehow changes. So I think that these stories about the death of the book and so on were just a little bit exaggerated. Because, simply put, this is a 500 years old medium, and a few Californian hippies who invented internet, they just cannot destroy a medium which is 500 years old. And as I said, I think the book is very important also as a medium which trains us to think, to focus, to empathize. And I even think that if the book was not existing, we should invent it now. But thanks God, we don't have to invent it. We just need to understand it in a new way in this new changed circumstances.
Yes, the book is not dead, which is good news to all of us. I really like with the model how interdisciplinary it is with you know, combining publishing studies and physics. I wish more models were like that. I'd actually like to follow up on your point, Miha, about, you know, the scope of this project that you mostly focused on the Western world. But, you know, you also are bringing perspectives from different countries, from the UK, from Slovenia. So how is your research both global and local? And especially for, you know, any scholars and students and professionals listening in, how can people from all over the world learn from your research?
Well, book publishing is global. There's no doubt about it. It's a global industry. You just have to go to the Frankfurt Book Fair to understand that. And we've got other players coming in, for example, Google and Amazon over the last decades, who are also global players as well. So you can't understand book publishing without taking a global perspective as to what's happening. But also different book markets have different characteristics. And we know that from our work in publishing, in book publishing, where book covers need to be different for different markets, book formats need to be different for different markets. So there's still a great variety of what works in different markets, even down to what kind of authors, what kind of publishing works in different markets. So that global local distinction is really important, I think, for understanding the book and how it works. So that's really important. And I think we have a very good European perspective. For example, we now know that audio outsells print in Sweden, for example. In the UK and the US, if we look at those markets, those have led the way in terms of the penetration of digital. But also we learn a lot just by looking at the market in Slovenia, where library borrowings, library sales are still important there. So I think it's, yeah, trying to keep these different perspectives in mind is really important when we're thinking about the book. And so there isn't sort of one size fits all in terms of the analysis that one undertakes. So I guess, Miha, I'll let you follow up on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we very clearly say in the book that this book is dealing with the book issues in the West mostly, because this is really our area of expertise. And in one of the chapters, we even say that one of the problems which we had in Western publishing and book studies was that we were importing our notions, what book is, to other cultures, other civilizations, other time periods. And we just don't want to do this. We looked at the book from our, let's say, European and Western perspective. And of course, here we had the advantage that Angus is sitting in the very center of publishing, of world publishing, or of European publishing, or Anglo-Saxon publishing in Oxford, and I'm sitting in the European backyard in Slovenia. And so we have two very different perspectives on how book business works. And out of many discussions which we had in, let's say, last 20 years, we somehow find out where these systems differ, but we also find out that European and Western book business has many, many things in common. And we started to explore from these perspectives, you know. But as I said in the beginning, book in China is really different story. Book in South America might be a different story. Book in Chinese history might be completely different story than what we call book in Europe. But these are all the areas which need a lot of interdisciplinary research. And we don't pretend that we have this knowledge. We don't have. We are just saying that this is an area where it's worth looking at. And I hope that some people someday will do a similar project as we did, from more, let's say, global and more culturally diverse perspective. Our book is just our booklet, or I mean, I even don't know how to call this publication, a minigraph, monograph, booklet. This is just one of...
No, it's definitely a book.
Yeah, well, according to our definition, it is, yes. But, you know, what we did in this book is just, I think, a starting point for for more global and, let's say, more open-minded research into what, into, let's say, dissemination of knowledge in a textual format.
I love that idea of this as a starting point for the conversation. Since we're getting to our end of time, I think this will be our last question, but you know, you both have done so much research and thinking and model development into this book. But if you were to distill, you know, the main takeaway, the main idea that you wish, you know, readers would come away from your research with, what would that key idea be?
Well, I think we do give a definition of the book in the book, but I think what we'd want readers to come away with is thinking about the dynamic model we present, so that this is a changing situation and business models around the book need examination. Mihar talked quite a bit just now about how, you know, the book as a carrier of information and knowledge is that in the area that is changing to some extent. And but I think the information architecture of the book has proved its worth, as Mihar says, over a period of time. And it's really interesting that in the area of ebooks, the most successful ebook sales have been with a vanilla ebook, which really follows the format of the printed book. And so that linear format shows its worth. And I think that's really important. So yeah, I think the dynamic model we need to keep under examination, and maybe, you know, we can give a definition of the book that works in this period of time, but it may have to be examined again in the light of other developments. So Mihar, what else do you think?
Well, I see this quite simple. As a main point of our work, I see the point that, let's say, long form linear reading or book reading still matters, regardless of the fact that we are surrounded by screens, because it's, as I said, a kind of a training for thinking. And my guess is that people who work in book industry and who are involved in these bookish things, they don't put enough emphasis on this. So I just become a program director of Slovenian Guest of Honor program at next year's Frankfurt Book Fair. And what I'm planning is to do quite a few events about this issue, because I think this is really a topic which needs to be discussed among let's say publishing circles. We don't know how important this is what we do, and we should be better in marketing the idea which stands behind the book and the book reading.
Wonderful. You very concisely were able to distill all of that. That's wonderful. That the industry is still changing, but reading printed books still matters. Great. So if you've ever wondered, you know, is this a book? Angus and Miha have the answers for you. This is a great mini graph from Cambridge University Press, and I'd encourage everyone to check it out. And we'll put the links to things in the episode. Thanks so much, Miha and Angus, for being here today.
Well, thank you very much.